morning, good afternoon, good evening. Wherever you are and whenever you are, welcome to this special edition of our podcast. Today we're going to help you make sense of AI in 2025 using the Tech Radar by DevoTeam. The opinion of DevoTeam experts on 150 emerging technologies you should know.
This is the CIO Confessions, a podcast by DevoTeam.
I'll be joined by six experts to discuss the key trends shaping the future of AI. Agentic AI, augmented development, and AI compliance and sovereignty. They will also help you choose the right technologies for driving value. Join us in this discussion and light up your AI journey with DevoTeam.
Welcome, Andrea. Welcome, Laurent. Thank you for being here. And as Patricia just introduced, we'd like to kick off this webinar with agentic. It's the big new thing that everybody talks about. And actually, my first question maybe, Andrea, is it really a big new thing?
It is. I do consider it the next big thing that we're going to see in AI systems and how they're evolving and how we, AI systems are going to interact and collaborate to solve a bigger, complex task. Mm-hmm. And I think that eventually also we need to understand that it's also not a one-size-fits-all technology. So companies need to really evaluate whether it's actually something that fits them for their needs. Yeah.
You agree, Laurent?
Yeah, definitely. I'm really enthusiastic about agentic AI, specifically about the autonomous thing. Oh. I would really love to already have agents to do a part of my job so that I can do something else, concentrate on something, running background tasks, difficult to be really multitasked nowadays, doing some analysis, doing some research, synthesis, and so on. Most of the time, I find prompting, even if it's really powerful, is a little bit limited, or we need to focus a lot to create great prompts. And I really think that agents will help a lot in our daily work.
Yeah, and it's maybe because with AI, since the big boom with ChatGPT, it's been kind of the promise, like, right? AI will do our work for us, and that would be amazing. And as you said, that prompting is a bit of a hassle, and you have to do it relatively precise. Mm-hmm. So maybe also for everybody who's watching, we think this is the big next thing, and it will do work for us. But what is it? Why is an agent different than the chatbot that I talked to today?
Well, I can address that question.
Please.
I think that chatbots can be seen like an agent as well. So as part of it, I think we can definitely categorize it as an AI agent. But you can categorize it in more of like limited way. And also coming agents to be part of the complementary part of chatbots. So agents are coming here just to complement chatbots and make them more efficient in the back. So we're going to separate that limitation of just having an interface where you just have some question, answering questions, and then agents are basically, by definition, a set of workers for yourself, or basically workers that are interacting with certain tools that help solve a bit more complex task and, make maybe enrich more some of the questions that we're getting with the chatbots.
Yeah, so that would also make that autonomous thing happen, right?
Exactly, it's like a bunch of workers working for you and doing some specific tasks. If you need to prioritize the call to this kind of customer, but you want to be sure, so you get on the web the last news and you build your pitch, and then maybe he'd like to get a text or to get an email. So it will create very complex tasks for you, running in the background probably, something for data analysis. He can explore data, he can gather information, he can maybe in the future create KPIs on the fly and probably predict some trends on data and doing a bit of work for you and saving a lot of time.
Could also be a bit scary maybe.
Yeah and no, because we always want to do more. Look at us, ourselves, look at the world today. We want to achieve more. So the question of time is important, is crucial. So if you can do more by saving your time on the tasks that are maybe a little bit more difficult for you to handle, why not in the end?
And do you believe that AI is at the moment so mature that things like hallucination, biases, and won't interfere with that autonomy. Maybe it does something that I really don't want it to do.
Well, obviously agents, it's not at the level that is as mature as just what we consider just the LLM in itself.
Yeah.
It really depends, right? So you're just having a bunch of different LLMs collaborating together. So, you know, with the more LLMs you have, also the more risk you have to you know, prompt into more errors. I think that the hallucination part is particular to the LLMs, but the agents are helping each other to, you know, review, revisit what the previous worker has said.
Yeah. So you can build kind of a quality system also as an agent, making sure that it does what you want it to do.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great stuff.
Yeah. On hallucination, first, we can also consider that human being hallucinates sometimes.
Yeah.
We are not always right. Everybody is not always right. But more than that, we always overestimate technological shift on short term and underestimate on long term.
Yeah.
Okay. Generative AI is just, 3-4 years old? And given the results we have achieved right now and what we see every week and the kind of equation we see, I think that the cost is divided by 10 every year. Mm. It's not doubled every 18 months. It's divided by 10 every year. I think that if we take the next 4 years, the evolution and the will be dramatic.
Yeah. And Laurent, you also mentioned data, of course, stays an important part of it. We also mentioned someday the agentic ready data platform, and that's also, you already have a data platform, right? What do you need to change to make it agentic ready, or is there a big change, or can you use the data platform that you already have?
Yeah, what we see, and we've already saw that in the past, is that it's not because you are going to deploy AI at scale, chatbots, agents, etc., that you that you can risk to create new silos.
Mm-hmm.
Data must be governed, data must be centralized at first, we come back on this later, and data, you need data to do AI. And it's not because it's unstructured data, which is in fact 80% of data in companies, structured data is only 20%. We build data platforms for structured data, we need to enhance our existing data platform for unstructured data, whatever it PDF, JSON-like files, videos, images, and so on. Mm. This is content, this is data, and it needs to be governed. And data platforms are the central location where this data will be centralized and governed. And so that you can create use cases, and you can connect this data to agents, to LLMs, to analytical dashboards, as we already do that.
So it's not a difference. So if I need an agent or something else, if I need to AI, I need a good governance data platform. There's not something specifically that I have to do for agents.
Yes, well, I could add on top of that, that, you know, what is important is that agents have the view, the total view of the data that you possess, because in that way, they can actually make better decisions. So if you constrain the agent to, you know, limited data, they will also make limited decisions that you don't want, because you want to, you know, give them certain level or degree of autonomy.
Yeah. And Laurent knows that for me probably, because the one centralized data platform sounds like an amazing dream, but is that reality? It would be great if everything is there, right? But how, is it not more realistic to have a federated data platform where you can bring that together instead of just one big data lake?
Well, everything comes with pros and cons, basically. Of course, it's challenging to have a centralized data platform. The federated model will come with more flexibility. You also have more local governance. At the end, when you have a big corporation, each of the teams have a focus on a different business units, right? Different business case, they have different business data.
Hmm.
So I think, we should also have a bit of a more mindset to have a hybrid approach. So we're able to have, you know, like a more centralized metadata view or catalog that we can understand, or potentially the agents could understand the data they could have access for.
Mm-hmm.
The centralized does not mean monolithic.
Okay.
Centralized means global governance that can be federated, every team having its own part in the global patrimony of the company, but it's not silos.
Yeah.
So we should be careful not to recreate silos, but to scale. We know that the monolithic approach and architecture that we had previously in traditional data houses and data platform is not the good model. It doesn't scale. Yep. It's not agile.
Yep.
So federated, centralized, but federated is a good approach.
Yeah. And in DevTeam Stack Radar, we already mentioned a couple of these agentic platforms, right? We mentioned LangChain, Crew AI, AutoGen, but there's also a lot of development at the moment there. When I want to start experimenting tomorrow, can I start with any or?
I would recommend that you start experimenting with the most accessible one. So, for example, Crew AI makes it really, really easy for anybody that even doesn't come with an engineering or AI engineering background to just set up, minimal agents for themselves. They also provide a lot of templates that you can just reuse, for example. So I'm particularly the type of person who would say you should first experiment and see if the use case, we come back to what we were previously discussing, does it fit for everybody?
Yeah.
And see with Crew AI, and then you need to, evaluate if a more, versatile tool like LangChain or LangGraph, which basically is using LangChain just to orchestrate multiple agents, is a better fit for yourself.
Yeah.
LangChain has been there for a long time, so it's powering a lot of AI systems. And then, also from company perspective, you need to understand that the tool that will fit the best is also the tool that integrates the best with your system. So, for example, you might want to look at tooling or frameworks that allow you to, for example, change between models, because every, maybe every month or every 2 months or, it is coming very fast, new models into the market. So you might want to have that flexibility. So then you need to choose your tool and depends on that.
Yeah.
Absolutely, completely agree. The agentic AI is a new way of thinking, developing, architecturing. So Crew AI is probably the best one, the most accessible for everyone. But keep in mind that there will be hundreds of agentic frameworks, and probably tomorrow frameworks that are generating agents.
Yeah.
So it's not because you start with one that you will keep the same one, and go into agentic also to understand how it will be integrated in the new data platforms in enterprise with keeping data security, role-based access, and so on. So keep an eye on the integration in companies and go into the agentic AI with a simple one, and you will have a lot of pleasure to use the other ones.
Great advice. Thank you so much, Andrea. Thank you, Laurent, for your great insights. And next up, we will look at augmented development with AI. So how will agents and AI change developers? So in the introduction, Patricia compared what's happening with AI in software development, what's been happening with DevOps and automation. So what happened maybe to IT administrators that did most of the work before DevOps and that we automated it and their role changed. Developers might also see a change in their role because of AI. Do you see that happening already, Sarah?
Yeah, I do. I think it's when we adopt AI even more into the development process, you will code less and you will be more of a supervisor as a developer.
Okay, and then what will a developer supervise?
Agents and the different processes.
Okay.
Of course, do some reviewing, debugging as well, but but more of supervisor role.
Yeah. You agree, Tim? You see the same?
In the end, he becomes his own project manager. So he needs to pull all things together, see his prerequisites are set to build, in the end, the application he needs. And everything can help. And he's the one who controls all the agents and uses, like Sarah says, for debugging purposes.
Yeah. And just before we discussed the agentic AI and what's happening there, but you already see agents working in development teams, or is that something that you start to see happening or will become more? How do you look at agents as software developers? What's the?
Yeah, I see it indeed that an agent become, or even more agents can become part of a developer team. if you're doing a project and you look at the effort estimation today of a project, those efforts that an agent can do can be replaced. So it becomes in the end part of a team. So you will end up into having teams that consist of a number of people with certain amount of agents, and they form development team or the studio mode team that we provide to our customers.
And Sarah, have you already seen examples of this, or is this something that you think might happen, or do you see this working in real life already?
I think there are examples of just maybe startups and smaller teams with some sort of customers, but I think it would just a matter of time when it happens. Yeah. I think you need maybe a bit more structure around it to be able to work with larger customers. But I think the teams, I mean, of developers will be smaller going forward, and you will work with agents, like Tim said, in the team.
And at the moment, I try to keep up a little bit with the technology, of course, but it's going so fast. But what I see, and we mentioned a couple of Cursor and Copilot and Q and all the stuff, but it seems to be focused mostly around productivity. So help the software developer be more productive, and not really the way that you already describe it, my whole team will change. So do you see the same, or is that something that I missed somewhere?
Actually, I think there are quite the development of agentics is really going fast at the moment. But I think it's been in the past, it was more of doing the development faster in that sense. Debugging, it can be code completion in that sense. But I think it's more and more going into doing the whole development as
okay.
well.
Okay, yeah. And Tim, so I just read an article 2 weeks ago or so. Somebody tried to build a complete system as a software developer, a non-trivial system, only with AI. And I think his results was, yes, it can be done, but at the moment, especially when you look at the architecture, at the system design, at the UX, not so good. So there seemed to be a role still for software developers. You just mentioned it's more of a project management role, but there seems also to be a role as the architect or the system designer, or making sure that the whole system stays working as a system. Is that something that you also think, well, that will be taken over as well, or will that stay a core role of a software developer?
Well, if you look back in time and you look 1 year ago and you look at where we are today, AI is evolving so fast, so that when next year, when we will be at the same stage, maybe those tasks will already be more sufficient. So you see, AI relies completely on all the training of the models that you do and how the agents are being built. And you see people building new models on top of existing models, always improving the results. And today, developers are using it indeed to analyze a problem, or how do I write this, or how do I do this? So it's more a supporting tool from that perspective. Because today, saying, okay, I need this, build it for me, and you just even don't look anymore to the code, we're not there yet. But since it's evolving so fast, we will go into that path. But today, people are indeed helping themselves by using AI to become more efficient. They don't have to know everything anymore. They can indeed focus more on the architecture, like you mentioned, to solve the overall problem and to build the model or the application they need.
Interesting. But now this is also a bit future, right? So yes, it will come. We see it happening already, smaller, with small startups maybe, but it's a motion that is happening at the moment. If I would like to start right now, so I think, hey, I have a software development team, let's see how we can get, where would I start, Sarah? Do you have an idea?
Well, we already have teams that actually have some early adopters in that sense, that stays ahead of the tech and looking into all the different tools that are coming. I mean, these are really senior developers that actually says that I code less and less. Write the code and do specification, architecture. So all those things will always be important and more important, I think, like Tim said as well.
So for people watching that right now that think, okay, this is interesting, tomorrow I want to start, where do I start? Do I just implement one of these tools, or do I ask an early adopter, go, go, go? What would be a good place to start or to augment your team? How would you go about it?
There are so many tools, but I think you can just ask AI of what kind of tool you. I mean, the latest one, and test it, I think, and see how we can use it. But I think in a real project with a customer, you need to use the tools and in a structured way and have a workflow. So it's one thing of testing, prototyping, and one thing of doing it in production. Yeah.
It's all about how we change ourselves in using the tools, not so much in which tool we actually are going to use, because tools evolve very fast. It's like you have the example with DeepSeek. It gets announced and suddenly everything before is immediately replaced. So this is constantly happening with all the tools. People develop a tool, another one makes a copy of it or improves it. And actually, what you need is, like Sarah also mentions, you need to have a framework around it that easily allows you to slide new tools under it so that you can keep using always the latest tools to improve your way of working. But the developer itself, he needs to get the habit in how to use actually these tools, how to implement it into his applications. Because for a younger person, it's maybe easy to start. But from a guy who was already, or a woman, programming 20 years, and they suddenly need to change their whole mindset in using AI in their day-to-day tasks, they have the habit to just go back to the old ways. So that's the...
So you say don't be too stressed about what tool you pick. Probably next month you will find a better anyway. So just start with the one that you have right now and focus on learning. And then you make that differentiation between junior and maybe more senior developer. I also had the idea that for senior developers, it might even be a bit easier than for juniors. Sarah, you have some experience? Because I see that junior people tend to just believe what they see, even if it's not that good.
Yeah. I think it can be. I mean, some seniors might find it hard to actually change and do, but I think... during the last years we have seen, I mean, the code completion and all that has coming, so it's just that it goes really fast at the moment. So I think for seniors it's easy to review and actually make sure if it's good and bad code. To do the debugging will always be important. For juniors, they will just generate code and it might be hard to actually review. But when thinking about it, I mean, why shouldn't they learn how to review code in a good and actually maybe do it faster than going from a junior developer writing code to a senior writing code? Yeah. I mean, that's also a step to go.
So there's kind of a balance, right? For seniors, it might be easier and it might be harder. For juniors, the same. So. And Tim, you also said, okay, but you have to build that framework, make sure that your developers know how to use it. Do you have an advice for people watching right now where to start like that? Is there a learning that you need to do? Is it just get in there? What's your experience?
Well, depending on the cloud platform you're using or the technology that you use for programming, like imagine that you are a .NET programmer, for applications, or you're developing AI, you make use usually of Visual Studio. So that's a good starting point. You have some nice agents that come along there. You have the GitHub agent that allows you to program more efficiently. So it's constantly going to make suggestions on some code blocks that you're writing. It can also improve your old code that you already have written to indeed review it and make suggestions where you can improve. These are the first steps to actually get started on how to apply actually AI into your way of developing. And in the end, when the AI models become more trustworthy, we can actually all let go and let the AI eventually build the application. And then we are just going to review the result and coordinate the AI agent to make adjustments, suggestions to fix things when we don't agree what it had built. So,
So in conclusion, it will happen. There will be a lot of autonomously created software. Timelines, not sure, but we see the first signs already. And don't focus too much on the tool, but focus on the way of working, the framework around it, and how you build your team around that. Sarah and Tim, thank you very much for your insights. And now we will look into AI and compliance and sovereignty. So welcome, Olivier and Anne. As Patricia just introduced, we also want to talk about compliance and sovereignty. We spend most of the time in this webinar talking about technology, but when implementing AI, technology isn't everything. And one of the big things that I see, at least, has a lot to do with compliance and sovereignty. But also interested in your, what do you see happening at customers in the market? Is compliance really becoming that important? And things like the EU AI Act, everybody talks about it, but do you also see the impact at customers already and in the market?
Yeah, so maybe a few words to introduce the question of sovereignty, because as you see, there is a lot of things happening in the geopolitical plane, and this is influencing the market as well. Sovereignty is about different things. You have first the strategic independence topic, I would say, that is about being able to, you know, do the full use of AI in Europe and not be dependent for certain technologies like, for example, China. We know they cannot use the latest versions of NVIDIA GPUs. We don't want to be in that situation, which means we need to have some leadership and champions in Europe. Fortunately, this is the case, and we have some very good players. That independence is also important, considering the languages and the specific values we have in Europe, because some languages are very small portions of speakers compared to the US speakers. And we need some local initiatives to be able to cover and address these needs, these requirements. And the second reason for sovereignty is, I would say, the economic reasons. We want to get a good share of the value chain. The value chain doesn't start at LLM. It's also starting at the energy production. Then we have the GPUs. GPUs, it's mainly US, but the energy, we do it broadly in Europe. You have the data centers. Some are global, some are local. You have the AI platform solutions, and then you have the AI applications. We, Devoteam, are contributing with our customers to develop those. And then the value which is created for the enterprise is mainly produced locally. So this is a split chain of value, but we need to have, of course, access to most of it. And the last part of sovereignty is the compliance. And compliance is about not only security, but also ethics and sustainability. And the credo of Europe with regulation is not that it's a constraint, but it will allow us to be better accepted by the users, and it will be, in the end, added value compared to a solution that would not include a regulation. If you see all the people moving away from Twitter, for example, to Blue Sky, this is the kind of phenomenon that we could anticipate. Yeah.
So that makes it really, really broad, right? So
yeah,
that it's a very broad topic that might also make it hard to tackle for a user. So Anne, maybe you've seen how you start with this.
Well, it's when we talk with clients and work with clients, it's data sovereignty and AI sovereignty, it's more geopolitical issue than a state issue than a company issue. So it's, when we talk with clients, we are more looking at security issue. Where is my data? Where is it stored? Where is the LLM train? Am I sure that I have the right framework in terms of governance of my data? And then comes the topic of compliance. But it comes rather late in the discussion, I think too late, maybe. And it's especially because it's a super moving topic. Compliance today is not what compliance was yesterday, and compliance could change tomorrow. If you take some regulators are changing the law as they see fit sometimes. And also, it's are the regulators able even to define what the compliance should be when it requires such a high level of understanding of what is AI, what is Gen AI, what is the data, and everything you mentioned previously, Olivier. So it's more important for us to help them navigate this always changing framework, give some reassurance about the security part, and then build the model and build the compliance model with them as part of how we can support them in this navigation. So it's more about that, how to explain, how to support, bring awareness about regulation, and how to build a flexible compliance management approach and process.
And is it, if it's changing so fast, or maybe not fast, or maybe they're a little bit behind, but it's changing, and it's should you start with it, or is if they change it tomorrow, why bother? Right, I understand why people don't do it at the moment, because if it changes again. What should you comply to?
There is a complying event. There is a law, and in there is the UA Act. So you don't have to choose.
You have to move.
And that's why you should build a flexible compliance management model to be able to adjust to any regulatory changes in the process.
Sounds like a great plan, but where do you start if you have to build a flexible framework? Any tips where people can?
More or less, the companies are following the schedule of the AI Act for Europe. So they are starting by registering the risks for their existing systems. And for that, they need to set up a process, a governance, and sometimes as well a AI governance platform, because it's useful to have a tool to manage all the data about your use cases. About the way your use cases are consuming data and the way they are classified. And I would say this is what we see happening today very broadly at many customers. I know as a solution for this.
I'm a bit biased. No, but it's true that sometimes with the platform comes the compliance management system and process that is already embedded in. Of course, I will take the example of ServiceNow. ServiceNow brings its own LLM, so there is everything around the data security that embedded. But more than that, they also built what they call the Noasis Guardian, meaning all the process in order to build your compliance, to build your governance, and to have an auditable system of your use case of your LLM. So could be embedded in the platform, or you could build it in any platform that can use this kind of process, because at the end of the day, it's just about analyzing the process of the AI Act, which is complex still, but still it's doable and manageable, and then build on that, create the workflow and the governance in any low-code, no-code application where you can manage and orchestrate the use case.
Yeah, you don't have to reinvent it, right? The EU AI Act, we have to find a better word for this. The EU AI Act is the same for everybody, right? So if we have that in a platform, then we can use that for everyone. But the platform itself also has to be sovereign.
Yes, indeed.
So where do you run the platform? Can we...
In UI?
In UI? Yeah, it's interesting with generative AI, especially because you can see now there are some emerging data centers that are called sometimes AI factories. These are the ones for running the inferences of LLMs. And as an example, Mistral AI, which is a European provider, has announced that they will build a data center in the south of Paris for European customers. And that's a way to decouple, the usual cloud workloads where you have your applications from the, I would say, more inference backend for the LLMs. You can make different choices. You can use, of course, the LLMs that are provided by the hyperscalers, but you could also use data centers from other providers in Europe, or run your own. We have some customers who run their own GPUs and their own data centers as well. So there's a lot of choices possible here to implement, I would say, compliance, specifically with regards to LLMs.
Yeah. And how do you see the difference? Because, of course, we have Mistral, and that's a European company, but we also have the larger hyperscalers that also all have their own sovereign way of working. Is there a difference, or is it the same, or?
Each has its strength. LLM has been, Mistral has been focusing specifically on the fact that being based in Europe, they invest a lot of focus on the European languages and culture, and also transparency and open source. And in that way, they sometimes are different from some top providers on the market. So for the customers who are looking for some kind of transparency, they are a very strong contender.
So you, as a customer, you have to, and we said it earlier, right? It's a technology thing. You have to look at which technology do I choose, but also the whole process and where do I start? How do I build something that's compliant, right? And that's also where that platform comes in, I guess.
Where the platform comes in to make sure that, as you mentioned, the data stays in Europe and is in Europe with a European data center. But it's also about awareness within the company to organize this awareness with all people who will be working on the with this LLM, with this different model, the end user, but as well the people who will do the governance on the platform. So I think the market being what it is, all the hyperscaler or platform will make sure that they are compliant with local or laws or European laws. So that's for sure, because we are a big market for them. So it's basic business oriented decision. But inside our own organization, and inside the client organization, there is a lot of also awareness to build, to make sure that we help this transition to the compliance as well, because it's like for low code, who will be able to create a new use case, what will be the governance around this use case, how do we evaluate the level of risk of the use case based on the data that it's using. So for me, it's a lot about awareness as well and training.
This is something that, you know, for those of you who know the Gartner sandwich of technology for AI, I like that sandwich.
I know.
It identifies three types of AI: the built AI, which is the classical AI you built with the IT, the bring your own AI, which is typically your chatbot that you built with no code tools, and the embedded AI, which is the AI which is contained in the software you buy. And all these types of AI, they need to be governed more or less the same way, with the same regulation framework. And this layer of governance, which is common to all, is a kind of new object for the company. And this is a very important topic to cover for companies today.
Clear. Thank you so much, Olivier and Anne. And I think what we've learned is we have to do it right. There's no choice. There's legislation, so we have to do it, but we have to be flexible as well, because we see that it might change over time. And it's for sure not a technical topic. As I mentioned in the beginning, it's much broader awareness. You mentioned it is a very broad topic, compliance and sovereignty, as you opened up with Olivier. So thank you again. And for all of you at home or wherever you are, thank you so much for joining this webinar. I hope you enjoyed our discussions, and explore more at techradar.devteam.com.
Discover other podcasts on devateam.com/podcast. Devateam, AI-driven tech consulting.